holding the line
for the conservative movement.
This is Stacy on the Right on Sirius XM Patriot 125.
Yes, yes. Welcome. Thank you for being with us tonight, friends. All right. We have Michael O'Neill, Vice President of Legal Affairs at Landmark Legal Foundation. You can find out more at landmarklegal.org. Michael, welcome back.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you, Stacey. How are you today?
You know, it has technologically, it's been a Monday, but I live in the Midwest where the storms were really, really tough. And so I'm just grateful that we, you know, we kind of survived unscathed, and I'm praying and trying to see how we can be helpful to the people who really had a tough time with it. So, you know, we just had a really awful storm come out of nowhere, and it's been crazy.
Ouch. Was it snow? Was it just thunderstorms or tornadoes, or what was it?
Yeah, we had tornadoes in Missouri, and heavy rains and high winds. But in Kansas, they had like a dust storm that caused a huge pileup of I don't know how many dozens of cars, and they had some deaths in that one. 8 people died. So it's just been a weird few days for weather, power outages, everything.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get in March. I mean, you know, one day I'm outside of DC. We can have 65, 75 and sunny, and then the next day it can be 33 degrees. It just depends. You know, you're always going to get
We had all of that. We left, I'm telling you, it was Friday, 78 degrees. It was so hot. The next day, and I'm still in Missouri, it's 42 on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the storm, the rain, the hail. There was tiny hail, but it was like piles of it. And then, of course, the windstorm, the dust storm in Kansas. And then I don't know what there was blowing in from Oklahoma, but there was some soot as well. I have no idea. But I you know what? I'm just grateful we made it to the other side. And speaking of making it to the other side, you are joining us tonight because there are so many legal challenges to President Trump's executive orders. Yeah. Can you kind of walk us through it? Because I don't even feel like I have fully read every single one.
Well, it's hard to get hold of all of them, right? Because it's just essentially, and I think I've said this before, essentially, the way you can boil it down, if you really want to take a step back, is that virtually every single executive action that the president is taking, no matter how popular from a political standpoint, no matter how popular with the people, no matter whether he ran on it or not, whether he did it, virtually every single executive action he is taking is being challenged in some way in a federal court. Now, I think the one we really should focus on talking about today is the one that's getting a lot of the news, is the district court judge in Washington, D.C., attempted to halt the deportation of those narco terrorists from Venezuela. And this is probably the outlier. And this is, in my mind, this is the one that really encapsulates a lot of the problems with these orders. And I think, first of all, the first macro level issue on this is the simple, the truth of what we're seeing by these district court judges. Now, remember, Stacey, we have in our federal judiciary, there's 3 levels of judges, right? There's the district court judges, and there's about 600 of them. They serve as the courts of first impression. Those are the triers of fact. Those are your trial judges, right? Your district court judges. Then above them, you have the appellate judges. Those are the circuit court judges that serve on the appellate divisions. And then there's appellate divisions throughout the country, D.C. Circuit, First, Second, et cetera. Then above them, you have the United States Supreme Court, which is the Supreme Court is, of course, we all know, 9 justices serve on the Supreme Court that have final appellate review of any case that they have jurisdiction over. But what you're seeing is smart lawyers on the left challenging who are part of a very, very massive organizational structure that is dedicated to opposing the implementation of Donald Trump's agenda, the agenda that the American people voted in favor of in November, incidentally, and that's an important thing. It's an important point to make. That the American people asked for this, that Donald Trump was elected overwhelmingly with his support, and even numbers now, poll numbers are bearing it out. The numbers, the support, the polls, the support that Donald Trump enjoys from a polling perspective is very high. The Democrats, the left, is almost record low. So these policies that he's attempting to implement and implementing are wildly popular with the American people, particularly this case that we can talk about, we can specifically discuss. This is the case that, again, Donald Trump made a proclamation via executive order that this narco-terrorist group was a foreign terrorist organization, and he invoked his authority under the Alien Enemies Act, which is a law that was passed in 1798 to detain, apprehend, and deport individuals who were serving in this narco-terrorist organization group and deporting them to, I think it was El Salvador, those prisons in El Salvador. And again, he was elected to do just this. These are the people, this action is reserved the most terrible of terrible people. These are narco-terrorists who engage in sex trafficking, drug trafficking, slavery, rape, you name it, these guys do it. They were apprehended. They were deported to prisons in El Salvador, and a federal judge, at the behest of groups, again leftist groups, who decided to bring these challenges, tried to halt that action. And he really went well beyond any kind of judicial authority he has. But what you're seeing here is these courts, these district court judges, issuing these nationwide injunctions that are having really effects that are way beyond anything that was they were ever intended to have. So that's a fundamental problem that we have to address, is the power of these single lone justice judges in these districts, these isolated districts throughout the country, have the power to impose these nationwide injunctions. And I think that's something the Supreme Court is going to have to handle.
So I got to tell you, this is the one that drove me a little nuts. So they're all stupid, in my opinion. And that's obviously not a legal term, but that's just how I feel. I feel like I want to yell, stop being stupid, because they've convinced Americans that President Trump is deporting American citizens, and that because he's doing so without giving them, quote unquote, due process, that these people should be brought to the United States so that they can have an opportunity to go before a judge to justify their being here. But the people that got off that plane in El Salvador, they're obviously gangbangers. I had someone confronting me online about this, saying that the fact is, this could be me. I could be deported this way without due process. Or any person who looks like they're a foreigner who has bad tattoos could be deported this way without due process. I'm sorry, but do gangbangers and, these people are here to wage war on our country.
They're not American citizens. Right.
Right. Right.
These are individuals who are here illegally. They're not citizens. So they're not here legally. They're not non-resident aliens who've come through the visa system and obtained legal visas. So they're subject to deportation proceedings. And then again, the Trump administration is acting rapidly and has identified the most terrible of the terrible. These are narco-terrorists. These are individuals that were deployed by the government and by Venezuela. And again, this is in the finding, the executive order, the proclamation by Donald Trump. These are individuals that were deployed to sow chaos in the United States, and they are part of a narco-terrorist organization. And it's amazing to me. Again, we could talk there's really two thoughts here. There's the political realm. You can talk about the political aspects of this and the wisdom of this politically, and you can talk about the legalities of it. Again, let's just delve into the legalities briefly on this. The issue is the president is exercising his inherent Article 2 power as commander-in-chief, pursuant to, again, a statute, a law that was written in 1798. And by the way, it really reflects the genius of the founding generation, the framers, that they passed a law in 1798 that has applicability today. And the law is valid. The law was reviewed by the Supreme Court post-World War II, and it's perfectly valid right now, and it is directly on point here. If there's a finding of a predatory incursion perpetrated by a foreign government, and again, these individuals are deployed by the Venezuelan government, then the president is well within his Article 2 authority to apprehend and deport these individuals. This is again, Stephen Miller said this on a couple of different shows today, and I'll just copy from crib from him. This is akin to the president deciding he's going to deploy an aircraft carrier to the Middle East, to the Red Sea to fight the Houthis, or to deploy the 101st Airborne Division to our southern border to protect our border. This is a president that is functioning within the contours of his Article 2 power, pursuant to a law on the books, a valid law on the books, that is directly on point to this. And the bottom line here is the courts have no jurisdiction here. This is a non-justiciable interest and a non-justiciable issue. And that's the fundamental question that every court needs to ask itself when a party brings a case before them. The first question every court has to ask is, do I have jurisdiction to hear the claim before me? And in this case, it is resoundingly no. This is a non-justiciable issue. The court does not have jurisdiction. Therefore, the court does not have any power to order a plane to turn around. And incidentally, let's just be very clear here, is the administration did not disregard any judicial orders. They complied with the orders. The plane was already out of the jurisdiction, was gone before this order went into effect. So the action had already occurred. So there is comportment, even though the fact that this order is completely unconstitutional, is completely outside the bounds of legality, and the judge is operating outside of his judicial authority, there was still compliance with the order. So the administration isn't not complying with judicial orders, even when they are wrong.
So I thank you for that distinction, because that was going to be my follow-on. So there's another issue here, and that is, yeah, and you touched on it, but we have to go a little further with it. So when the case is brought, what's supposed to happen here? We see what's happening. These people are forum shopping. They go to a judge that they know is friendly.
Right.
That judge takes the case and issues an injunction against the executive branch, which they really don't, they're not able to do. What are they supposed to do when they get these cases before them?
Just dismiss it. This case is non-justiciable. I don't have jurisdiction here. You get motion to dismiss filed for lack of jurisdiction, and you just dismiss it. Unfortunately, oftentimes these come out in an emergency petition, and the government doesn't even have an opportunity to answer, because you're seeking emergency relief in the form of a temporary restraining order, the TRO. And again, the bar for obtaining a TRO is lower. Again, those are TROs are emergency injunctive relief that is sought in cases, you know, for example, spousal abuse. You need to go if you're being abused by your spouse and you need to get somebody thrown, you know, your abusive spouse thrown out of the house. You go and you seek an emergency action because he poses an imminent threat to you, or your spouse poses an imminent and cognizable threat to you. So again, it's an emergency petition that's there. Again, the relief really they're fashioned, just to get a little legal with you here, they're fashioned as temporary restraining orders because the bar is lower, but in function they really action as preliminary injunctions. And again, it's harder to obtain a preliminary injunction, and it's a higher burden for the claimant to make. So, you know, simply the court shouldn't enter. Look, the court should ask itself a fundamental question: is this a justiciable issue? The answer is no. Case dismissed. If you want to take my dismissal to the next level, to an appeal, you go right ahead and see if the circuit's going to reverse me on appeal, and then you go from there. But the cases can be dismissed summarily and very quickly.
Yeah, but I guess the reason why they're not getting dismissed is because they go to a judge that hates Donald Trump.
Right.
And they relish the idea that they can call him on the carpet. Like, I was shocked to see that him say he wanted to have someone from the Trump administration explain why the plane wasn't turned around. And I thought, oh my gosh, how can he call someone from the executive to explain actions that they've taken in the discourse of their duties? You know, it's just, it's unheard of.
It's asking, imagine a DOD official, imagine calling a general and saying, why are you deploying the aircraft, or an admiral, and say, why are you deploying the aircraft Abraham Lincoln in the Red Sea to fight the Houthis? Explain that to me. The president is functioning as commander in chief pursuant to his constitutional authority, pursuant to his statutory authority. And the simple matter of the fact is the statute is directly on point, that courts do not have a role in this. It is not a justiciable issue, and the court should dismiss it. But as you said, these are the litigants in these cases who bring these cases are sophisticated. They know to bring these cases in courts where there's primarily sympathetic judges who are going to be open to their arguments, no matter how specious they are. And they know that there is a strong likelihood that they're going to get the relief requested, at least initially, and be able to come away with that. Now, there's a bigger issue here, and I think this is a fundamental issue. We touched on the politics of this. And as I said before, the Democrats and the left have at the lowest point in recorded history, really, if you want to look at it. I think their favorability ratings of Democrats are lower than they've ever been. Since 1980, if you look at the CNN and the NBC polls, we're talking numbers historically low. The American people are behind these actions. The left and the Democrats are defending narco-terrorists. Let's put this very clear. Do you think that that's going to resonate with the American people? Absolutely not. So what this means to me and my perspective is the courts need to be cognizant of the political winds here, because they only have so much. The only power they have is based on the faith of the American people and their faith on the integrity of the judicial system. The Supreme Court needs to be cognizant of this as well. Keep in mind, the courts have no inherent enforcement powers. They have to rely on the full faith and trust of the American people and the American institutions, i.e. the executive branch and Congress. And when that trust is eroded, what's going to happen? It's funny. I think Stacey back to the 1930s, and again, I didn't support FDR's actions, but there was political pressure brought in the 1930s. Remember that the Supreme Court was striking down all those legislative actions and all those regulatory actions that FDR was trying to push through on the New Deal. And what did FDR bring? He brought the political pressure, and there was that switch in time that saved the nine. So I want the Supreme Court to understand that there is a need right now, an immediacy, to have this to wrestle with this issue of nationwide injunctions and to make an effort to identify and rein in these judges who are operating well outside their judicial authority.
Wow. So, okay. So let's. Well, there's. I still have so many questions. Okay. So earlier, actually, it was on Sunday night, and it was Newt Gingrich. He joined Mark Levin on his Fox News program. Liberty and Levin or something like that. It's Liberty and Levin. It's a fantastic program. Anyway,
he joined Liberty and Levin.
Yes, yes. And he says that, you know, years ago, the Congress had, I guess, activist judges, and so they disbanded certain courts over their activism.
Yeah.
He recommended that Congress pull these judges in one by one and force them to submit to questions as to some of the salient points you've brought up tonight. Like, you know, what made you think you had jurisdiction? Why would you, you know, feel you could order someone in the executive branch to do anything? And other things like that. Is that possible? Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, keep in mind, in the Constitution only specifies the Supreme Court. And again, Congress has the legislative authority, the Article I authority, to establish lower courts and the jurisdiction thereof. So there's the Judiciary Act. And the Judiciary Act establishes the lower court system, the appellate courts and the district court system. So Congress certainly has a role to play in this. And it's funny because I'm always barking about that. I think it's really one of my pet peeves is we need a more activist Congress. We need Congress to understand where the political winds are blowing here and to step up and do what's necessary to assert their power. I mean, in my perspective, from a constitutional conservative perspective, Congress is the most powerful branch on paper from our Constitution. They have a role to play here. They have an oversight role. They have a statutory role. They can set the jurisdiction. They can pass laws. They can call these judges to the carpet. They are accountable to, again, they're essentially accountable to the Congress. And so, yes, Congress has an active role to play in this. And I would really welcome an opportunity that Congress seize the initiative here, as suggested by those gentlemen, and play an active role. Again, look at this. The political winds are at their back, right? The American people overwhelmingly support this. I cannot believe that the left and the Democrats in particular, are going to the hilt in defense of narco-terrorism. I mean, these are the cases you want to live or die on. I mean, I just it boggles my mind, Stacey. But certainly Congress has a role to play here, and I welcome the opportunity to see them actually play that role.
Yeah, me too. I would love to see them bring these people in because, you know, there's nothing like a congressional hearing. C-SPAN and some of the biggest accounts on Twitter are congressional members, and they retweet this. Maybe Elon Musk is watching, he retweets, so that millions of Americans can understand that there are judges, Article III judges, who, as I understand it, they swear to uphold the Constitution as well. And they actually are working to defend terrorists, people who support terrorism, people who attend the funerals of terror leaders when we kill a terror leader, these people leave their jobs and travel overseas to attend the funeral of the terrorists we killed. I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking more Americans need to know about this.
And what are we talking about? We're talking about deportation proceedings. You don't have a right. If you're not a citizen, you don't have a right to enter and remain in this country. It's not an absolute right to stay in this country. And these are deportation proceedings. You're saying, look, if you're going to attend the funeral and you're going to sympathize with a Hamas terrorist or a Hezbollah terrorist who killed hundreds of people, guess what? You're not welcome back in the United States. If you're going to come here and you're going to be deployed by the Venezuelan government to conduct narco-terrorism operations, guess what? You're going to be deported. And it boggles my mind that the left is so caught up in their derangement syndrome that they go to the hilt to defend these cases. But from my perspective, continue to do that. My caveat on all this is I'm an attorney. I'm a procedural guy. I want to see the judiciary do the right thing. I don't want the American people to lose faith and trust in the judicial system. But unfortunately, that's the road and the path we're on when we see these judges doing this. I would like to see the Supreme Court work. Look, the Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts' title is Chief Justice of the United States, not Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So I would like to see the United States Supreme Court take the steps necessary to rein in these judges, get their own house in order before Congress has to step in. And again, I'm not against Congress stepping in and doing anything, but I'd like to see the judiciary handle this as well. And I think that, you know, to get the own judicial house in order, the American people are not going to stand idly by and let this continue to happen. They overwhelmingly support these policies, and I think they're going to express their disagreement with it via Congress. And so I really implore the Supreme Court to take on these cases and to rein in these judges that are operating well outside any of their authority.
Such a great distinction. This is what we learn when you come on the show. I always call him Chief Justice John Roberts, but I assume it's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. But you're saying he's the Chief Justice of this entire country. That is such an important distinction.
Yeah. The head of the judiciary. So, again, it's incumbent upon them to exercise their jurisdiction and understand. And don't punt this one, please. You know, they punted the USAID one, and that was a disappointing decision. But when this one comes up, please, I implore them, don't punt on this decision. Understand that the president is operating within his presidential authority and overrule these decisions and do the right thing.
All right. So let's talk about a few more of them. That was the most egregious. And for anyone who's tuning in and thinking, what does he mean? There is I guess she's a professor. She's in the country. She leaves the country to go to a terrorist funeral. And then on the way back in, they search your phone. They look at the pictures on your phone. They see the pictures of this terrorist funeral on her phone. And she said, these are some pictures of someone that Shia Muslims revere. And so they deported her.
Good. Right. You exactly. You don't have an absolute right to come into the country when you sympathize and openly empathize with the worst of the worst. Again, this is not a deprivation of a constitutional right. It is a privilege to come to enter into this country if you're on a non-immigrant visa, on any kind of visa. It's a privilege. The State Department retains the right, the executive branch retains the right to refuse anybody entry to this country for people who are known enemies. And again, these are organizations that have committed to the destruction of the United States. To Israel specifically, one of our closest allies in general, and the United States. So why would it make any sense to allow individuals who are sympathetic and have expressed support for individuals committing to the destruction of the United States to come back into the country on a non-immigrant visa? I don't understand how this can even be controversial, Stacey. I would bet, I'd lay odds that you could have, I could find 100 people, random Americans, and say exactly what I said, and 90 of them would agree with me. This isn't a 50-50 issue. At the very least, this is an 80-20 issue. This shouldn't be controversial. But again, this is indicative of what we're talking about, the Trump derangement syndrome. He really encapsulated in his joint session of Congress, Stacey, when he said, look, I could do anything. I could cure cancer. I could grow the economy by 20%. I could reduce the deficit to zero. We could be in budget surplus. I could usher in this golden age of American prosperity, and you still wouldn't clap for me. And that's exactly what we're seeing, right? No matter what happens, no matter what things that are commonsensical. And incidentally, Stacey, not to just get too far, none of this is really outside the – this is all stuff that Democrats supported 20 years ago. So I ask you, what's happened here? What's happened to them?
Well, I don't know what's happened to them. They've been radicalized, but it wasn't even 20 years ago. Some of the things you're talking about, like, having an orderly immigration system, that was Obama. That wasn't 20 years ago. He said
right.
Similar thing. There's fresh video of him, Joe Biden, even Hillary Clinton, not when she was running for president, but before, when she was a Secretary of State, when she was a senator from New York. They all talked about orderly immigration, a privilege to be here, the kind of language that most Americans will agree with, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, which is why their approval rating is so low. Any other cases that we should know about? Because there's been an injunction on pretty much all of them, sometimes three injunctions per order.
Yeah, some of them, I'll say that, look, just to just generally, I think it's hard to get, you know, if you can get into specifics of one thing, but a couple things to keep in mind. Cases where he's exercising his authority to terminate employment, to fire essentially government workers, I think the takeaway there, there's a case called Wilcox that's going to go up to the Supreme Court. And I think that's going to be, I think the Supreme Court is going to affirm the power of the president to term, to end the employment of individuals who serve on these independent agencies like the NLRB, for example. And I think that's called the, it's an encapsulation, it's an extension of the unitary executive theory. So you're going to see an affirmation of the president's power to the executive power is vested within the president of the United States. Therefore, these individuals who serve on these independent agencies can be fired by the president of the United States when he comes into office. They don't have a right to continue to be employed despite even when the president wants them out. So those cases are going to be good. When you see the exercise of presidential personnel decisions, those are probably going to go the way that Donald Trump hopes they're going to go. There's going to be some questionable when it comes to cutting a lot of the spending. There's going to be some issues. Hopefully Congress is going to engage. It's going to utilize its power of rescission. I think you've seen some members of Congress talk about that. I would like to see Congress, again, here we are talking about Congress playing a role here. Congress can play a role by actually rescinding some of these expenditures that they've designated in some of these omnibus spending bills. So I'd like to see that. It's going to be harder to fight some of those if Congress has made a specific domestic appropriation for a specific purpose. Then it's really going to be hard to cut those absent congressional authority. I don't think you're going to find a lot of sympathy from any of the courts in those cases. But I think the personnel cases are probably going to go the way of Donald Trump. I think you're going to have to see Congress step up in some of those cutting the spending cases. It's going to be hard to do, but again, I think the political winds are in the favor of the conservatism and the Republicans in those cases.
So much good information. There is a little known agency over the weekend. It was kind of I wouldn't say it's a huge story, but I thought it was a huge story. You have this agency that was stood up by the United States Institute of Peace. It was created by the Senate, and the Senate actually confirms the people who run it. The president appoints the board, and the DOGE guys couldn't get in. They went to go to basically run their DOGE programs and kind of set up shop. And the attorney for this organization said, you can't come in here because we are an independent agency. We don't report to the executive. We report to the Senate. That sounds so fishy to me. But the people are actually confirmed in the Senate. The people who run the organization are, I guess, they're presidential appointees, but the Senate has to confirm them. Do you know anything about this?
I don't know the specifics of that case, but it is interesting. You have, you know, this is again coming around from the unitary executive theory. I like to keep it neat. Look at our constitutional structure, right? There is the executive branch where the executive power is vested within the executive branch. I don't like to have these independent quasi agencies out there exercising executive, judicial, and legislative authority all in one. I don't like the concentration of power in that because, again, where is the accountability? Where is the separation of powers? Who are they answerable to? How are they funded? Are they funded via annual appropriation? Do they have some sort of statute that continues that they exist in perpetuity? There's all kinds of things. I like to see a clean separation of powers. If there's an agency functioning as a government agency, it needs to be reported. It needs to be reportable to the president. It shouldn't function in judicial capacity. Similarly, if there are entities created by Congress to support the role of Congress and the legislative role, Congressional Research Service, et cetera, then that's the prerogative of Congress. I don't know the specifics about it. If the president plays a role in appointing it, then it does sound to me that it might be a quasi-agency. I'd have to see the efficiency of it. But again, I think this is another big point, Stacey, is what is DOGE doing? DOGE is just taking a look at the books of government entities and saying, hey, is your financial house in order? You should welcome DOGE coming in and saying and performing an analysis. I don't understand why this is controversial. If they want to come in, they want to look at your books, all the better. You're answerable. Ultimately, you're accountable to the American taxpayer for all of this stuff. And if you get a clean bill of health from DOGE, I don't think that's an affirmation of that you're keeping your financial house in order. And if you're not keeping your financial house in order, I think that should be made public because the American people are financing everything. This is the American taxpayer that's on the hook for this. And that's where the buck should stop.
I agree with you 110%. And I'll just say, look, I'm not against the different things that have happened historically. Apparently this thing is like its mission statement reads a little bit like USAID. It's for soft power, but it's to promote peace. But if and it has a tiny little budget, you know, something like $54 million. But I can't tell you how many times I've thought about the things that DOGE is doing, and I know the purpose is to cut and right-size government. And so something like this, I know that they made it and it's historical and everything else, but it sounds so fluffy and full of nonsense. They need to get rid of it. And every little bit of what they're doing, they should be thinking to themselves, if an American taxpayer was sitting next to me, what would they think? And it just sounds like a load of nonsense to me, but I'll be watching. The good news is DOGE is on the case, and it's, you're so right about the polls. I'm so excited about what they're doing. Michael O'Neill, VP of Legal Affairs at Landmark Legal Foundation. As usual, I learned a lot. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, always a pleasure, Stacey. You have a great night.
All right. You have a wonderful night. We'll talk to you again soon, Michael.